It's a lot.
Good morning to you. Let's give everybody a second to get in and out. If that has been accomplished, then you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Lauren Wallach, Assistant Public Defender for the Douglas County Public Defender's Office. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Carrie Swanson. This is an appeal from a juvenile court proceeding in which Ms. Swanson's parental rights were terminated. There were several issues discussed in our brief, but for purposes of time, I'd like to focus on two main issues this morning. Specifically, whether Ms. Swanson's was denied due process of law when the juvenile court terminated her parental rights based on her participation in a coercive placement agreement. And secondly, whether the juvenile court erred in terminating Ms. Swanson's parental rights.
Counsel, wasn't the first issue decided in this court's previous opinion in this case?
Your Honor, the first issue was addressed when this case was before you last year. However, since this case has been remanded to the trial court, additional evidence has been presented to the court, which brings this case back before you today. Specifically, the evidence that was presented on remand was that there was testimony that the Department of Health and Human Services coerced Ms. Swanson into a voluntary agreement with the Department of Health and Human Services. And that conversation was that Ms. Swanson, if she did not participate with the voluntary agreement, that her children would not be placed back with her. At that time that that conversation took place, her children were already removed from her care. So what happened was the children were removed, and she was told, if you want to get your children back, this is what you need to do.
Was that issue within the scope of our remand?
I believe what was addressed on remand was that the court had said that due process issues could be triggered by the use of coercive tactics by the Department of Health and Human Services. And it is our position that this testimony that was presented on remand did rise to the level of coercion. And specifically, this conversation that was presented on remand was not before the court before.
Didn't we remand the case to determine whether the state demonstrated by clear and convincing evidence that termination of parental rights was appropriate and in the best interests of the minor children?
Correct.
And that due process issue doesn't fit in either of those issues, does it?
It does not. I agree with that statement, Your Honor, but I also believe that what we are bringing to the court this morning is because when it was remanded at that time, our client, Ms. Swanson, had not been able to present her case yet. And so when she did present her case, this additional evidence did come out on remand. And so we are bringing this back to the court at this time because we believe that the additional evidence does bring up this point again, the due process violation.
So you're in essence arguing that collateral estoppel or res judicata does not apply in this instance, or law of the case does not apply, because there was new evidence that couldn't have been presented in the first trial.
Correct, Your Honor, because...
Could not have been?
Because in the first case, it was dismissed at halftime. So Ms. Swanson did not have an opportunity to present her case when it was before you previously.
Were the items she sought to introduce regarding facts that had already occurred?
This conversation, it had not been presented at that time, no. And the state had not presented that evidence either. They did not present the other individual in this conversation, which was the IA worker, had not presented, nor did they present evidence of the voluntary agreement. So the only testimony would be that of Ms. Swanson, which was presented when we were back to present our case.
So following the remand, additional evidence was received.
Yes.
And that evidence pertained to what time frame? Matters before the first trial or matters subsequent to the first trial?
It would have been contained in the first trial also. If I'm understanding your question correctly, Your Honor, it would have been the same incident regarding the voluntary agreement, the same conversation. However, the evidence was not presented previously at the first trial. But it's still the same time period where she was during her voluntary period.
In other words, those events occurred before the first trial.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. In the court's opinion, this court had stated that this case was similar to the cases of the Sixth and Seventh Circuit. However, based on the additional evidence, we believe that our case is analogous to the cases of the Third Circuit as present in Croft and Starkey. Specifically, that the evidence shows that there was an ultimatum presented to Ms. Swanson, and that the case law is similar to that because of the ultimatum presented by the Department of Health and Human Services to Ms. Swanson at that time, and that no voluntary agreement was presented.
Well, without belaboring that issue, maybe you should move on to whether or not there was clear and convincing evidence that the best interests of the children require that the parental rights of the mother be terminated.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Our second issue is also that the court erred in finding clear and convincing evidence of terminating Ms. Swanson's parental rights. Specifically, the evidence presented showed that Ms. Swanson is not an unfit parent. Instead, the evidence showed that she was actively participating in services. Specifically, she was successfully discharged from individual and family therapy. She continued to participate in visitation, family support services. She completed multiple chemical dependency evaluations. She participated in drug testing. She participated in medication management and peer-to-peer mentoring. She also completed her previous court orders and successfully reunited with her children. She was in the process of completing the noted requirements prior to her children returning when the Department of Health and Human Services made their unannounced visit in August. So in this case, instead of having a parent who is not participating or being inactive in reuniting with her children, she was actively engaging and working towards this reunification with her children. So it's our argument that she is not neglecting her children, or we do not have a case where here where she is substantially or continuously failing to work towards reunification.
Well, wasn't there evidence that between January of 2012 and maybe March of 2013 or even a longer period of time that she saw her children just once, and that her visitation with her children over Christmas was for 10 minutes? And what other visitations did she participate in subsequent to the state's filing the petition for termination of parental rights? How active was she in the visitation?
In regards to the visitation, Your Honor, I believe that the testimony is not reliable because the worker who testified regarding the visitation stated that there were several family members who were approved for contact, for supervising the contact with the mother. However, she did not speak with all of the family members. She said she only spoke with two of the family members. And although she did say that those two family members did state that she only saw the children, I believe, a few times over that month period, she did testify that she didn't contact those other family members, so she could not confirm if the mother was still seeing the children. And she had no plan to set up to see if the mother was continuing to see the children over the other months.
These are not supervised visits so that they are recorded in some formal manner?
The worker testified that they are their family supervised visits, and that she did not have a formal way to set up to contact this family. So she did not have a formal plan of whether these other family members were supposed to call in and tell her if they did see the children or not, and she also did not follow up with these family members to confirm if she had confirmed that they had seen them either. And this is the same worker who also testified and perjured herself on the stand that she had authored an affidavit of diligent search when she had actually been in contact with Ms. Swanson on around the time when she had authored an affidavit.
So that's who's not to be believed. Who is to be believed?
The other testimony regarding the visitation are the FPS supervisor, who's relying on the testimony of this worker. So our testimony regarding visitation, that's what I'm saying, is not reliable because it's coming from a worker.
What's the best evidence of, in your view, reliable evidence of visitation that would favor your client?
Would favor our client? I don't believe that the state had presented enough evidence regarding visitation to show that she hadn't been seeing her children.
I see.
Also, Your Honors, I also believe, just to finish that thought.
You may finish your thought.
Thank you, Your Honor. The testimony in this case shows that the workers in this case did not follow through with their referrals. And based off of that information, we would ask the court that would reverse the decision of the juvenile court.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Is it Ms. Crystal Clark?
It is.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. I believe that Ms. Monahan and I, since we are both appellees, that we're going to split our time.
Five minutes each.
5 minutes each.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Please, the court, Jennifer Clark, Deputy County Attorney with Douglas County, here on behalf of the state of Nebraska as the appellee. In regards to several of the questions that were noted by the court, this court in its ruling previously in regards to In Re of Joseph S. made specific findings in regards to the fact that they believed that Judge Sirkovich of the Separate Juvenile Court of Douglas County had ruled incorrectly when she believed the state had not provided adequate evidence in regards to subsection 243-292 as well as best interest, stating that at that time the state had proven beyond clear and convincing evidence, the state had provided enough information to the court in order to make that determination at that time, including in the case law. This court found that the only way that the voluntary services of Ms. Swanson would not be applicative to the evidence that was presented by the court is if there was information provided that it was not voluntary, that it was coercion, that she was forced to do it. Hence, then, this court then made the finding that beyond that type of distinguish, then the case would remain as set. So this court then reversed and remanded the case to go back down to the Separate Juvenile Court of Douglas County in order to afford the opportunity to Ms. Swanson to provide that evidence as it relates to possible coercion. The state at this time believes that that evidence was self-serving, that it was not best evidence, that the only evidence actually presented at the subsequent trial for the minor children was the mother testifying strictly to basically what this court said needed to be found in order to show coercion. Amazingly, she was able to testify to exact wording of the initial assessment worker as to what was told to her, that if she didn't do this, if she did not sign the voluntary agreement, then her kids, and they would be filing, and her kids would never be returned back to her. However, if you look at the transcript, additional questions presented by the state that were asked about her being present at family team meetings, her being present in regards to other meetings that were held with Ms. Melissa Misogatis, as well as some of the services, she couldn't remember. So the state would like the court to give deference to the fact that the juvenile court judge did observe Ms. Swanson, observed her behavior, and did not believe what she was saying in regards to these issues of coercion. I think the evidence is very clear, actually, in regards to what was previously testified to the first time in trial as way to the second time in trial, that there was evidence showing that the reason why there was concerns about this mother.
Didn't the state, or didn't the guardian ad litem and ask or consider that issue during the first case? Weren't they arguing that she had been denied procedural due process by being forced, or that this was an issue that she alleged that she'd been denied due process by being forced to voluntarily relinquish the custody of her kids to her brother?
Yes, they did argue that.
Wasn't that issue in front of us the first time?
Yes. And this court has
and
said
could
there
she
was
have
not
offered
any
it,
evidence.
Could she have offered the testimony and evidence that she made at the second hearing? Could that have been offered at the first hearing?
It could have if Ms. Swanson was given that opportunity to testify. I know that, again, that Judge Sirkovich had made her halftime ruling basically before any evidence presented by defense counsel in regards to having Ms. Swanson testify. So none of that evidence was actually presented. What was presented, though, was Ms. Misogatis testifying about the voluntary services, that the reason why the case actually came in was because the mother's whereabouts were unknown, because the mother was possibly using meth, that this mother was allowing the children to remain with a relative and not making her whereabouts known. So in regards to that information, it also can be inferred from that testimony that Ms. Swanson really wasn't even available at the time that her children were actually placed with a relative. Ms. Swanson testified that she didn't even contact the department until the next day. So my question is that did she even know when her children were actually placed? So it also is indicative of Ms. Swanson and her behavior that if she was told that the only way that she was going to get her kids back was to work voluntarily, as shown in the evidence in regards to those voluntary services, Ms. Swanson was nowhere to be found. She was hardly presenting herself for UAs. She wasn't doing evaluations. She wasn't doing therapy. And Nebraska Families Collaborative had a difficult time getting a hold of her. So her behavior itself is indicative of really if there was coercion.
Well, what would the record support the determination that from the time the petition to adjudicate the children was filed after the voluntary custody had been terminated or had expired, that there was clear and convincing evidence that the best interests of the children required termination of the parental rights?
Because, Your Honor, you have to also look at the history. There was evidence shown that this mother was afforded 32 months of services. Did she get her kids back? Yes. But within 3 months, there had been at least 2 to 3 hotline calls made to the Department of Health and Human Services of ongoing drug usage, of leaving her kids with relatives, and her whereabouts being unknown. That, in and of itself, shows continuous and repeated neglect under such. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Ms. Monahan, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Maureen Monahan. I am the guardian ad litem in this case. And I know there is some procedural confusion. I believe all the parties proceeded after the last ruling of this court in that there was no evidence of coercion, that the other attorneys did remark that Judge Sirkovich dismissed the allegations regarding termination of parental rights essentially at halftime. We proceeded under the assumption that since there was no evidence of coercion, that was part of what the mother's defense presented.
So you read the remand as an opportunity to present further evidence.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes, okay. That is correct. The mother was the only one who testified, and she did testify that she felt essentially that she had no choice. She also testified that she had no idea that she had a right to an attorney, that there were legal rights presented, or that she had any opportunity for an independent trier of fact. She was basically told, you want your kids back, you'll do what we say, and you're not going to get them back. Despite that, Your Honor, I believe that there was a second issue which this court addressed, which was under 43-292 subsection 2, prior to the Joseph S. the first opinion, this court had never used evidence from a case in which the parents had successfully reunified with their children as evidence of unfitness. It is in the opinion that evidence can be looked at. And because of the previous court case and then this filing, I believe that evidence alone, without the voluntary services portion, supports termination of parental rights and best interest. I think it's important that the voluntary services portion be excluded from determination because it is extremely unclear. And if we look at this from a policy standpoint, the mother was unavailable. She had left the kids with relatives. Nobody knew where she was. She was using meth. And they said, gee, let's do voluntary services in which there is no oversight of the department, no one's checking on the children, and if the mother does show up, she has no procedural due process rights. And in truth, the children didn't have procedural due process rights either. we set up the juvenile court, the legislature set up the juvenile court to protect due process rights in these matters. And clearly the voluntary services in this case went around those. So I would ask the court to make a conclusion to exclude the voluntary services portion but to allow the previous case in this case to be enough evidence.
Well, just as a hypothetical, sure. If there was information during the voluntary services or during a voluntary services program that, let's say, mom was clearly abusing methamphetamine, do you want us to set a rule that in future cases that information could not be used just because there was a voluntary program in place?
No, but that should be a trigger to provide information to the county attorney in an affidavit to make a filing. There should, just like at what point is someone arrested? There is a point at which someone is not allowed to leave. And if they are not allowed to leave and they are not with their rights, then they are, that is a violation of the process.
What framework are you working in as though rules of evidence applied in termination?
I'm stating that from a due process standpoint,
okay.
Both the mother and the children at some point were entitled to that due process of protection.
Well, what about in the first hearing? Why don't you raise it in the first hearing?
Your Honor,
say a halftime determination made by the court. If you claim that you've got a violation of this voluntary process, why don't you present the evidence to the court and raise your due process issue at that time?
Your Honor, the record will show that upon the state presenting its initial evidence, Judge Cirkovich said clearly voluntary services could not be used as evidence in termination and dismissed the two points addressing termination, so there was no opportunity to present that evidence after that point. That's all I have, unless you have any other questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, thank you.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Sean R. Purpleding. Mr. Brandt, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is John Brandt. I am the attorney for the appellant, Sean Purpleding. Mr. Purpleding was convicted by a jury of four counts of failure, or excuse me, of felony non-